Evidence and Answers begins right now. This is Evidence and Answers radio broadcast with our host, Pat Zukran. Pat is an author, teacher, and international speaker in the area of Christian apologetics, the defense of the Christian faith. Is Christianity really a reasonable faith? On this episode, Dr. Joseph Holden and Dr. Pat Zukran show how Jesus used logic and reason to teach truth, expose error, and defend his claims. Jesus demonstrated that faith and reason go hand in hand. Stay with us today and discover how loving God with your mind is essential to following Christ and sharing the gospel. Now let's get right into part one of this two-part discussion regarding how Jesus used logic.
Joining me on the broadcast is Dr. Joseph Holden, author, pastor, and president of Veritas International University, and Dr. Patrick Zukran, author of The Apologetics of Jesus and co-founder of Evidence and Answers. Pat, Joe, great to be with you today.
Great to be with you again, Brian.
Well, during this season on Paratus, we're discussing apologetics, specifically looking at the apologetics of Jesus. You know, in a parthenon of religions, Christianity is unique. It's a reasonable faith. As monotheists, we believe in a rational, morally perfect God. God is not only the necessary being, but is omniscient. He knows everything. The Lord has complete or maximal knowledge and awareness of everything that exists, has existed, and will exist. Furthermore, as creator, God endowed humans with the capacity for reason and deep thought. Reason is part of the image of God in our lives. And even in our fallen state, we still have God's image implanted in our person. Sin has effaced the image of God, but has not erased it. So practically, this means that Christians and non-Christians both think rationally. As beings made in the image of God, we are designed to know and to live according to truth, to logic. We can identify error. Furthermore, as the Logos of God, or the Word of God, Jesus is the perfect human, using his entire human faculties, including reason, to love the Father perfectly. So a huge part of Jesus' ministry was to teach and defend truth, using reason. And through this process, Jesus demonstrated to be a philosopher par excellence, using both the laws of logic and truth and reason. So, as you could tell, this is an engaging subject and one that we're going to explore on today's broadcast. So, Joe, let's start with you. As we like to do, we like to define our terms. So, tell our listeners, what is actually logic? What is reason? And how do logic and reason act as the foundational laws of thought?
Well, when we come to logic and reason, especially within the Christian worldview, and by extension, everybody should be concerned about good logic and good reason. But when we speak about logic and reason, they're closely related, but there's a distinction that should be made between the two. Logic is specifically provides the objective rules of thought. And these rules transcend ideology. They're above religious perspective or worldview. These rules are something for everybody to read off the same page in how we discover truth and how we employ these rules of thought. Reason, on the other hand, refers to the subjective process of employing those logical rules in our discovery of truth. We look and see if arguments are valid and they're sound, and that if we can discern the truth from employing these objective logical laws, so to speak. So more specifically, logic serves as the framework that contains the objective laws of thought and the principles of valid reasoning, which are known by some as first principles. Now, first principles are first because everything in that category of logic and reason flows from these first principles, which are the laws of logic. These laws help us discover truth. They help us to evaluate arguments for certain subjects, maybe the argument for God. We have to apply these rules of thought, these objective logical laws to them to discover the truth. And by applying these rules, we can discover all kinds of different things about an argument, whether it's valid or whether it's sound or whether it's true or whether it's false. So in short, logic is the framework, the objective framework that guides the subjective reasoning process. And I think we all need to be aware that logic is a negative test for truth. That means simply it can tell you what cannot be true. It doesn't tell you what is true, but it tells you what cannot be true. In other words, if Jesus is the Messiah is true, then anything its opposite, Jesus is not the Messiah, must necessarily be false. So essentially, without these logical laws guiding our reasoning processes, we would have no idea or ability to attain any truth or knowledge about anything. And what's so great about these logical laws is that their foundation is found in the one and only true God of the Bible. God himself, he is the source of these logical laws. They flow immediately from his nature to everybody's mind and heart. And they are universal for all people. They're absolute. That means universal. It extends to all people on the planet. They're absolute. That means they're true and undeniable. You try to deny the laws of logic, you actually affirm them in the very denial. Oh, the logical laws don't apply to reasoning about God. Well, you just applied the laws of logic to reasoning about God to make that statement. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to make that distinction between logic, the objective rules, and then the subjective reasoning process, which we call reason. Now, there are just three basic laws that, for our purposes today, would be good for our listeners to know. The first law of logic is the law of non-contradiction. It says that A cannot be both A and non-A at the same time and in the same sense. So this is essentially saying that if something is true, its opposite must be false, or else you're going to have a contradiction. Jesus is the Messiah and Jesus is not the Messiah can't both be true. If Jesus is the Messiah, then Jesus is not the Messiah must necessarily be false. And then you have the second law, the law of identity. It says A is A. If we didn't adopt this law, we wouldn't be able to identify the difference between God and the devil. The clock is the clock. The chair is the chair. God is God and Satan is Satan. We can't confuse the two or else we'll fall into a contradiction. And then the law of excluded middle is the third law of logic. It's either A or non-A, but not both. Since it would say that opposites can both be true if we don't hold to this law. Because what do? When we start reading a book on atheism and they make their argument for atheism, we have to make a distinction between what they're saying is true and what they're saying is false. So essentially, logical laws are the objective framework that guide our subjective reasoning processes. If we fall apart in using these logical laws, then basically we'll find ourselves either concluding error or we won't have any access to any certain knowledge or truth at all.
So good. And I know some of our listeners may be scratching their head going, what just happened there? That's one of the reasons why at the end of the broadcast, we always give books for further reading. And one of the nice things, you could always go back and re-listen to this broadcast and take notes as well, because again, one of the things we try to do on Paratus is give our listeners real concrete information, almost like seminary in a box, where you're getting very practical, useful information that we hope you could use. And so, though laws of non-contradiction, non-identity, excluded middle may seem a little obtuse to you, just know that they have very, very practical application in our Christian life. So, Joe, thanks for that, and we deeply appreciate your knowledge on that. Patrick, I'm going to move now to you and just ask a simple question. Joe kind of laid out these three basic laws, kind of refined and defined what logic and reason. So my question to you is, how did he employ logical principles and reasoning in his life and ministry?
Yeah, great question, Brian. You know, God is a rational God, and the principles of logic that Joe just taught us here flow out of his very character. And we're made in the image of God, and so we're designed to discover truth through logical thinking. And people might be intimidated, but, you know, we use it all the time. I mean, you can't have a coherent conversation, you know, without using the laws of logic and sound reasoning. I was at a fantasy football draft the other day, you know, and a lot of these guys say, oh, I'm not a a student of the Bible like you, I can't think, I'm not a scholar. But boy, you watch them giving reasons why you should draft this guy number one, or why they drafted this tight end first, and they're throwing percentage. They're giving reasons and logical arguments for their choices. And, you know, we even expect children to use logical thinking and be reasonable. If you find a cookie jar empty and Johnny's fingerprints all over it, and you sit down with Johnny and you say, Johnny, who ate all the cookies? And if he says, well, Billy, my younger brother, you kind of look at him and say, Billy's 1 year old. He can't open the jar. And he says, well, Sally, sister Sally ate it. And you go, Sally was at Jenny's house all afternoon now. So who ate the cookies? You know, you're expecting them to be reasonable or logical. So logic is necessary. And it might surprise some people, but it's required even before the gospel. You know, you've got to be able to understand the gospel. God is holy. We are not. We are sinful. Well, how can we? A price must be paid in order to fulfill God's justice. You know, I mean, that requires logical thinking. And Jesus showed himself to be a brilliant thinker, a rational thinker. He used the laws of logic to reveal truth, to destroy arguments against truth, and to point out error. And Jesus expected his audience to think logically and reasonably. And so he used the basic laws of logic that Joe went over there, the law of identity, the law of excluded middle, the law of non-contradiction in his teachings. You know, for example, I mean, let's take the Sermon on the Mount, where he teaches about anxiety. Do not be anxious about your life or what you will eat or drink or about your body, what you will put on. And then he doesn't stop there. He gives you a logical reason here. Look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not more valuable than they? So he's using a logical argument here. We call this a fortiori, you know, from the lesser to the greater. And so he's making a very reasonable argument here. So Jesus used, you know, logic, the principles of logic, and gave sound reason arguments to build his case and point out error.
So good. And I appreciate what both you and Joe said. You know, logic and reasoning is foundational to not just Jesus's mind as when he was in his human form, but it's foundational to all human beings. We all use logic and we use reason. So what we're positioning is we need to use it well, not just because we need to use our brain well, but we also need to defend the gospel, you know, accurately and with precision. So that's I'm very thankful for that, Patrick, and particularly the example of how Jesus used principles of logic and reason. So, Joe, I'm going to go back to you, and I'm just going to say at the beginning to our listeners, I apologize, but I'm going to throw out another deep subject that maybe some of you would go, oh boy, here they go. They're digging deep here. But again, these are important because they can help us think clearly, and they could also help us give the gospel in a very forthright, understandable way. And so my question to you, Joe, is, you know, Pat just kind of outlined how Jesus used some of these. Jesus didn't use a syllogism per se, but there were elements that we could compare Jesus's teaching to a syllogism. So first of all, what is a syllogism, and how could something like a syllogism help us defend the gospel?
Oh, that's a good question, Brian, because sometimes within the church, we get a little frightened when we hear these words that we're not familiar with, or they're big words, but there's no need for that. A syllogism is simply a simple argument with a premise and a conclusion. Usually, the simplest form is two premises and a conclusion. For example, the universe had a beginning. The universe had a cause of its beginning. The universe began, therefore the universe had a beginning. So this is something that is called a syllogism. It just has two simple premises and a conclusion. And Jesus used this type of reasoning throughout his ministry. When you search through the Gospels, he always told the truth. He made statements of fact. He asked questions and so forth. And albeit Jesus used what you call enthymemes, which are abbreviated arguments or arguments that presuppose premises as well as part of the argument. At least that's how it was written by Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But that's no distraction from the truth, because Jesus said that he was the one who declared the Father. In John 1:18, he says, "No one has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son who is in the bosom of the Father, he has declared him," made statements about him. And that word declared is exegesato. It's where we get our word exegesis from. And it talks about articulating God, drawing out the meaning of what God is like. And that's what Jesus did, but he did it through rational, logical means by telling the truth. And one such syllogism is that leaves no middle ground. It's either this or that, is found in Luke 11:23. He said, "He who is not with me is against me." This leaves no middle ground whatsoever. The statement is either true or false. If you're against him, then you're not with him. If you're with him, then certainly you're not against him. No neutrality here whatsoever, no middle ground. He also, in Matthew chapter 6, verse 14, he says, "For if you forgive men their trespasses, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you don't forgive men their trespasses, neither will your Father forgive your trespasses." So essentially, you can boil this down to, if we forgive others, then God will forgive us. The second premise can say, we forgive others. And then the conclusion, therefore, God forgives us. And you can read all kinds of these statements in different forms with different types of logic using the rules of logic as he articulated what the Father was like, his teachings, his views on morality and sin and salvation and the afterlife. And Jesus was always crystal clear on what he was talking about, because he never failed to speak in a way that was consistent with sound reason and the laws of logic. Now, some people at this point say, well, God can't be subject to the laws of logic. But as Pat said before, these laws flow necessarily from God's nature himself. So God isn't subjected to the laws of logic. He is the source of the laws of logic. He's acting in accordance with his rational being as the one true logical and rational God, which should give us all great comfort when we read the scriptures.
Yeah. And again, I'm empathizing with our listeners here. Again, you know, as Joe pointed out, syllogisms and other terms may become unfamiliar, but just know how important they are. And know that what Joe just said is so comforting to us, that God is a God of logic, of reason, and he has infused or put that in us as well. So when we use logic or reasoning in our defense of the Christian faith or in speaking with others, we in a way are representing, echoing who God is. So very important. And I know on a personal level, Joe and Pat, that, you know, many people will throw out to us, "Hey, you know, you Christians, you guys are so illogical. You believe in goofy things. You guys are just, you've checked your brain out at the church door." And the opposite is true. The history of Christianity has always positioned both faith and reason. You know, the Lord has given us a brain to use that brain, and we have always employed the use of logic. And so we're not saying anything new. This goes back to Aquinas. It goes back to Anselm. It goes back to Augustine. It goes back to St. Paul. And as Pat pointed out earlier, it goes back to Jesus. So there is a long lineage of Christians who have used both faith and reason in their lives. So good.
And,
go ahead,
and
Joe.
Also, we see in the Old Testament, Isaiah chapter 1, "Come, let us reason together,
yes,
saith the Lord." And then Paul wrote to the Corinthian church and says we need to take our thoughts captive to the obedience of Christ. In other words, we are to lead our thoughts, not our thoughts or feelings lead us. And then what does the Lord say the greatest commandment is? It's to love the Lord with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength. That is the greatest commandment. Then love your neighbor as yourself. So we have been taught to use sound reason and logical argument and to take our thoughts captive and to worship God in spirit and in, John 4:24 says, truth. And the only way to recognize and discover that truth is to employ those laws of logic and to think rationally.
Yeah. I remember in my general education days, years and years ago, back in the late 80s, I took introductory logic class by I believe she was a former nun or had studied to be a nun, and my brain was spinning. It was one of those things where I was going, what does all this mean? But as I grew in my faith and I really started to take the Bible seriously and defending the faith, I began to see how important it is and was to understand these basic laws. So, Joe, Pat, thanks so much for that. Pat, I'm gonna now turn it back to you. So we've kind of laid the case that Jesus used reasoning and logic, but he also in his ministry avoided various logical dilemmas. Tell us what a logical dilemma is first, and then give us an example of how Jesus kind of used logic or turned logic around to, you know, show misthinking or misunderstanding on the part of the other person.
Yeah, you know, Jesus was the most brilliant thinker, and he demonstrated what Joe talked about, loving God with all your mind, and he demonstrated it perfectly. And the teachers of his day always tried to catch Jesus in some kind of contradiction here, violating those basic principles of logic that Joe talked about. And one of the most popular ways was to catch Jesus in some kind of contradiction, trying to show that, hey, Jesus, look, you believe in two opposite truths here. And one of those comes in Matthew 22. It says, then the Pharisees went and plotted how to entangle him in his words. In other words, they're trying to show Jesus is violating the laws of logic here. He's being illogical, irrational, and thus a false teacher here. They're trying to catch him in a contradiction. And so they come up to Jesus and he says, should we pay taxes to Caesar? They think they've got him. This is what we call being caught in the horns of a dilemma, where you're given two options, A or B, and either one you pick, you end up in trouble. And so Jesus knew if he said, well, yes, then he'd be a traitor to Israel. But if he said, no, don't pay taxes to Rome, then he's a criminal to Rome. So either way, they think, aha, we've got him in what we call a horns of a dilemma. And Jesus understood, you know, when option A and option B is not acceptable, there is a third option here. And so he looks at them and he says, well, give me a denarius. And they do. He said, whose likeness and inscription is on this? And they say, Caesar's. And he says, well, give to Caesar's what is his and give to God the things that are God's. You know, and it says, he blew them away. They marveled and walked away. When the Sadducees come and ask him about marriage and the resurrection, because they do not believe in a resurrection. And so they think, hey, here is a dilemma that's going to expose the contradiction of Jesus' teaching here. You know, and it's a dilemma they have posed to theologians of their time who believed in the resurrection. He said, look, Jesus, a man dies, has no children, he's got to marry the widow. Well, she marries his brother and he dies, and then the next one dies. She marries all seven brothers, all right? So at the resurrection, who's going to be her husband? And they think, ha-ha, I got him. And it was a question that was not answerable for probably centuries. Jesus says, option A is not acceptable, option B is not, but there's a third option here. This is called getting out of the horns of a dilemma. And Jesus said, you're wrong, because you neither know the scriptures nor the power of God. For in the resurrection, they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are like the angels. And then he quotes Exodus to demonstrate the reality of the resurrection. God said to Moses, I am the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. He is not the God of the dead, but of the living. And so you see how Jesus was able to, using the principles of logic and give rational arguments, get out of these logical dilemmas. He simply didn't dismiss them and say, well, don't bother me with this, or, well, just believe. I know my teachings don't make any sense, but hey, just believe. No, he gave sound, rational, reasoned arguments here. And so he was a brilliant thinker, demonstrating how to really love God with all your mind.
Once again, we've run out of time. Thank you for joining us here on Evidence and Answers. Our goal is to bring you the love of Christ and to equip you in your faith to always be ready to give a response. If you would like to hold an apologetics conference or series of teachings at your facility, contact Pat by calling him in Hawaii. That number is 483-0586. Or you may email him through the Evidence and Answers website. That's evidenceandanswers.org. Be sure to browse through our listing of topics on our site. We have everything from atheism to Zen Buddhism. You will also find articles and additional audio for you to listen to or download. An additional location to find Pat's messages is on YouTube. Look up Evidence and Answers and hit the subscribe button. To keep quality broadcasts like Pat's on the air, we rely on generous financial support from you, our listeners. Donating is simple. Just log on at evidenceandanswers.org. Evidence and Answers is grateful for one of our sponsors, the Honolulu Christian Church. If you don't have a home church and are looking for a place to grow in your faith, check out the Honolulu Christian Church. For service times, log in at honoluluchristian.org. Join us again next time on the air or online as we provide compelling reasons for faith in Christ. That's Evidence and Answers with Pat Zukeran.